Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. People Magazine begins its latest primetime TV adventure tonight. True crime is the beat on view in People Magazine Investigates, happening the Investigation Discovery. Executive producer Thomas Cutler joins me next in the same day, Internet Radio exclusive. NBC was a live-action teen zone on Saturday mornings during the 1990s, and it all started with a natural phenomenon all its own, Saved by the Bell. In our next half hour, we've got an exclusive live chat with executive producer Peter Engel, who authored a new book about SBTV. It's out November 15th. And also ahead, you've got an opportunity to win Engel's book, I Was Saved by the Bell, with our classic trivia question of the week. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in this half hour. Happy to have you with us on this pre-election day edition of the program All About Television. Great to have you with us wherever you are along the Blog Talk Radio line. WDG Reads, the top of the hour here in New York. Got a good hour in store for you, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, your voice, and using this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the world, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is going strong. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So get involved. We just welcome guests 1, 2, 3, 3 in the room. So either way, use the phone or the room. We will hear you. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. One quick news note before our first guest, that long-awaited show on VH1 involving Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg, known as Potluck Dinner Party, premieres tonight at 10 p.m. on VH1. This Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg's long-awaited combo show, Potluck Dinner Party, tonight at 10 on VH1. That's 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And now joining us live from Silver Spring, Maryland, near the headquarters of Investigation Discovery and Path Discovery Communications, the executive producer of People Magazine Investigates, Thomas Cutler. Thomas, good to have you aboard.
Thank you, Simon. It's great to be here.
Of all the things that People Magazine could do, and they've had a long history of getting involved in television in different ways, why did they decide to go the true crime route?
You know, People Magazine is obviously a huge magazine with enormous readership. And over the last couple of years, they've seen their crime stories, their true crime stories specifically, really pop. And I think that really doing kind of a deep dive for them on why do these shows work, the emotion, the ins and outs, the twists and turns, made them start thinking in a bigger way. How could we make this even bigger? And they came to Investigate Discovery, which is really the hub for all things true crime on the TV side, and said, let's do a partnership. So that was the genesis of how we came together.
Now, they and you believe that this is going to be a way to elevate the true crime genre. And, of course, it has broken out all the place. In a way, your network really developed the idea of true crime on television 24/7. But we now have Netflix with Making a Murder, which is coming back. We have Killing Fields on Discovery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you and people, by teaming together, want to elevate this genre?
You know, I think, first of all, focusing on the quality of the program itself. I mean, these are riveting cases ripped from the headlines. But they're all true stories. And you know, unlike some of the other shows, we have all exclusive interviews with the people that were involved. And it's really powerful stuff. It's really emotional. And I will also say that because of the cross-promotional effort, we are able to get this out there everywhere. I mean, right now, the cover of People Magazine is Long Island Serial Killer, which is our premiere episode tonight. But it's on their cover, and they're promoting not only the episode, but they're doing a deep dive into the story. So it's great cross-promotion and co-branding in that sense. So everyone, not only our viewers will see it, but all the full readers will learn about the story and then say, hey, we've got to tune into ID tonight. So that I think, is very different from a lot of these other shows that you mentioned.
How do you determine, and they determine with you, what stories they will make into episodes, and in particular this first episode tonight is a two-hour show, and it's in two parts, first part at 9, second part at 10.
Yep. Okay, so how this works is we work hand-in-hand with the editorial team at People Magazine. We also work with the production company, which is Radley Studios, and Radley is a company based in L.A., and all of us work together on, they're the ones who are actually producing for the network. All of us work together day in and day out on finding stories that are really going to work for not only our brand, but for People Magazine. And, you know, going back to that, something as big as Long Island Serial Killer, where people have heard about this, but they don't really quite know all the details. It's a larger-than-life story. So if you look at that and say, it's great for us, people are going to be mesmerized by it, but also for People Magazine, the viewers are going to say, that's right, remind me what happened. Where are we now in the investigation? I wouldn't believe the amount of twists and turns in that case itself. Other stories, we have the Jeffrey McDonald case called Jeffrey McDonald the Accused. And in the vein of Stephen Avery and Making a Murderer, that one is a 25-year-old case, but it's still the jury's out on who did it. We have another case, what happened to baby Lisa, involved a couple of parents who were accused wrongly or rightly, jury's out because they never figured out what happened. Their baby went. So these are kind of what you'd imagine being on the headlines of People Magazine, and we're taking them now to the headlines of the TV screen.
The show is called People Magazine Investigates. Thomas Cutler is the executive producer. The program premieres with two-hour episodes tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Investigation Discovery, and it will be on every week on Monday night. Thomas joins us live from Silver Spring, Maryland this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sean Applebaum will be live from New York, up the road from him into Webby, New York. It's 52 degrees outside at the top of the hour. Beautiful day on this pre-election Monday here in Webby, New York and across the country. Happy you are, boy. If you have a question or comment for Thomas, give us a ring and use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday is Veterans Day, and we're watching with a big two-hour edition of our program. We have a lot of great guests coming your way. It kicks off with Mike Richards, one of our favorite guests. He's been with us before a number of times. He's the executive producer of the longest-running game show on television, The Price is Right, now in season 45 on CBS, and with Drew Carey in his 10th year as the host. He also executive produces Let's Make a Deal, and he'll be our lead guest on Friday. Then, Crackle opens a new season next week of The Art of More. It's a full-season drama of last year about the art world of starring Dennis Quaid. And we've got the new executive producer and writer on the series, Brendan Kelly. And our second hour, we'll lead off with Jojo Jimmy. He is the creator and executive producer of Red Oaks, the popular Amazon series going into its second season. And finally, we'll meet an award-winning producer-director whose latest work is called Hungry. It premieres on Logo later this month, and it's a special about three chefs, female chefs, who want both equal pay and equal respect in their workplace. And we'll hear about it from producer-director Patty Ivins. That's all coming up Friday, two-hour edition, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, noon to 2 p.m. Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Thomas, talk about the process by which People is involved in having these stories happen. How often do they look at these stories? What editors are involved? How do you put the story together in conjunction with People?
Sure. So they're super involved. I mean, they have a big brand, and they want to really be focused on expanding that brand and elevating their brand, to use your words earlier. We look at stories that are a good fit for the entire series, and then we break it down, outlines, access, who can we actually get to talk on camera and tell the real story of what really happened. We go from outlines then to scripts, shooting scripts, rough cuts, fine cuts. And that's what I do with the actual production company day in and day out. But People is looking at every cut along the way. They have a whole crime division, true crime division now. So it's not, you know, if you imagine People Magazine, they have lots of different divisions. Of course, there's fashion, there's celebrity, there's entertainment. They have a true crime division too. And it's four or five people that do this exclusively. And so we work hand in hand with them in terms of not only the brand, but the story itself, making sure that we got everything right, that all of our facts are there, we're telling the best story we can. So it's a pretty involved partnership on that level.
On some of these episodes, you're trying to go back more than a decade, sometimes two decades, and try to find either witnesses or families who were involved in these crimes. How difficult was it, or how cooperative were they in terms of reliving what they went through?
You know, I think that you can expand on that in kind of a macro way, and that with any true crime story, not everyone wants to talk. And so, you know, what we do, we're very conscious of that fact and respecting people's who've gone through a lot of pain in some respects, or that they've been, you know, they were involved on the legal side or the police side, et cetera. So we work with the people, journalists, to say, listen, we want to tell the story as best we can, and we want your voice in it. And sometimes, you know, I mean, yes, 10, 20 years can be trickier just because people have moved on. Literally, they may be living somewhere else. They may be older. We want to make sure that their memory is what it was. But even if they're cases that are 5 years old, they're sometimes tough cases. So we work, really, we do a lot of legwork before we do anything else. In terms of, would you be willing to tell your story and your perspective on the story? And it doesn't always work, but we don't circumvent people. We don't do anything like that. We make sure if they won't talk and they don't feel comfortable talking, then we stop there and we move on to something else. We want to respect that. And people feel the same way in this genre completely.
So I'm sorry, Thomas. I just want to welcome guest 1261 to our chat room. Come on in. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us a call. Go ahead, Thomas.
No, I was just following up. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. But the age, if you go past 10, 20 years, then it definitely becomes more difficult. And it also becomes more difficult because access to records, like if you think about now what we take for granted in terms of everything's online, everything's stored. You just type in, go to a website, and you can find anything. Obviously, more than 20 years ago, I mean, forget DNA that they didn't have at the time. Just the files. If you don't actually have that old piece of paper with that information typed out, not on a computer but on a typewriter, you're in trouble because you don't know what happened. That is a very challenging part of our business. Getting access to those old cases and the case files and what really happened. Sometimes, and we recently had a case where it was not for People Magazine, but another show, and there was a fire at the police department, and it took out all of the case files, and they didn't have backups. This was just, it was about 30 years ago, and it all went up in smoke. So, what do you do?
Now, as a result of this new set of episodes, have any of the cases profiled been reopened, or are they going to reopen because of the fact that you're investigating this with people?
You know, Long Island Serial Killer is a good example. Tonight, it's 2 hours, as you said. It's there's part one and part two, and it's a very complicated case, but you can't tell the whole thing in one episode. But right now, the FBI is reopening the case. To be honest, it was never actually closed, but it had somewhat stalled. The FBI is involved, and they're working. And, you know, the show, I think, has given some a little bit of energizing to the folks, powers that be, and the police and the FBI. But they were doing this already, and I think that what's going to happen is the cover of the magazine, and now a whole show on it, it's going to light a fire, and they want to figure out who did it. The Jeffrey McDonald case is, you know, one we'll never know. Will there be something as we put this show that comes out where someone who's never told some bit of information comes forward? We have one other case, Petty Murders, which was about 25 years ago as well, California Unsolved. But right now, they may have found some new evidence that they're looking into, and that may give a lead as to actually who was the perpetrator of this crime. So I think that the show does help push people forward. And if they're not doing it already, they might think differently. They might try a little harder.
What's it been like for the editors and writers at People who covered these cases when they were unfolding? What's it been like for them to go back to their stories and try to not only recollect what they did, but also to update them?
Yeah, there's a good example of that is one of the episodes we have is The Grim Sleeper, which was a case in South Central L.A. In the 80s. And it was someone who was targeting African-American women. And it went unsolved for years. And there were a number of murders. And then this guy went dark. He went dormant. And then he came back. And one of the people, journalist, Christine Pelichek, she was the one who actually branded him the Grim Sleeper. Because a lot of people didn't put two and two together. When the first murders happened in the '80s, yes, they were connected, but then nothing happened after that. The police thought, maybe this guy went to jail, maybe he died, something happened. All of a sudden, it starts up again a couple of years later, hence the name Grim Sleeper. She coined the phrase, and she is one of the main interviews in the show. And it's, I think you're, in answering your question, reliving this, I mean, these reporters, these journalists are looking through all of their old records. But then once you get them on camera, they're really starting to feel what they felt at the time. I mean, they were on the stand. They were covering this day in and day out. And they give that amazing insight into the case that you would never get from anyone else. And, you know, if you have someone just talking about it, kind of from 30,000 feet, that's all well and good, but it's very different than someone who broke the story or was involved every single day in covering it, because they know all the players. They know the families. They know the cops, the legal team. So they have this amazing insight. So I think that's a great thing to have. And in some of these older cases, you don't always get a journalist who covered the case. In this case, we did, and it makes a big difference. And you can see it when you watch the show. You can see it because it's so powerful for them on camera.
Thomas Cutler is the executive producer of People Magazine Investigates. It's a new series from People Magazine Investigation Discovery. Premieres tonight on ID. 2-hour premiere at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And Thomas joins us live this half hour from Silver Spring, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. This half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live up the roof from where he is in Nueva York, where it's 53 degrees at the top of the hour. Delighted to have you with us. Again, it's pre-election day special, and we are happy you are aboard. If you have a question or comment for Thomas, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. 90-minute edition coming your way next Monday, and next week, Nat Geographic Channel, what actually will become Nat Geographic, will present what may be its most unique project yet. It's a hybrid scripted, unscripted program called Mars, including the talents of Brian Grazer and Oscar-winning director Ron Howard. We've got the executive producer who oversaw the project in a big way. He's also a key executive at Radical Media, the company that worked with Imagine Entertainment on this project, Justin Wiltons. He'll be with us live as our lead guest. Also, we'll preview a brand new GSN series. It's called Window Warriors. It's about the art of designing those wonderful displays you see at department stores, particularly around holiday time. And finally, we'll meet a very remarkable woman who's put together an interesting documentary series that is coming up next week on Fusion. It's called The Traffickers, and we will have the host and the writer of that special, Nafar Hadayat. That's all coming up next Monday, 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Be sure to join us. What's it been like to work with the people at People, plus a production company, plus your folks at ID, and sort of juggle everybody so that the episodes all work out?
You know, it's a movable feast. You've got lots of departments at People Magazine who all want to weigh in. You've got lots of departments at a network that all want to weigh in. And you have to really stay on the ball to make sure that everything's covered at all times. And it's from communications, marketing, digital. There's a huge tie-in with digital on this. 5 years ago, you know, that really wasn't as much the case, but now it's front and center. You've got the cover story. How is ICE working with People and the cover story? Then you have, that's on the sort of the super high level. Then you have the granular level of the shows. Which acts work, which don't, what colors are you using, what fonts, how exactly are you tying in with everything that is People, literally, but also putting it on TV. It's a complete simpatico. And there are a lot of moving parts. And the production company is the one who, they're putting this all together. So they're taking direction from us at the network, and they're taking direction from People. And then they're putting it all together and coalescing it. And if there are any issues, then they'll wave the flag and say, hey, what about this, what about that? But I can tell you that we're every other day there's a conference call between some group at these two big companies, Discovery and People, to figure all this out.
On December 19th, you got an episode about what may be the most notorious case right now, and that's the JonBenet Ramsey case which has been the subject of a number of documentaries, a major TV movie on Lifetime over the last couple of weeks. How is what you're doing distinct from what everyone else has been doing the last few weeks?
You know, that's it's an amazing case because it's one of those that, sort of like the others we were talking about, Chris, that kind of haunts the American psyche, and in part because there's no resolution. The one that I mentioned before, who killed Baby Lisa, is very similar in that you have two parents, the kid was missing, they had not found their daughter, but there's a lot of angles. There's a lot of people weighing in and saying they did it, they didn't, and it could have been so-and-so. Really, really similar to JonBenét. I think what people bring to the table is that unique perspective in pulling all sides of the story and kind of saying, here, there are multiple theories. We've covered this from day one. We can explain each and every one as to what happened. In the end, right now, there is no resolution. You don't know what actually happened to that little girl. But by watching the show, you'll know all the theories that happened, that were going along, that have been going along for the past 20 years, kind of where it is now. And to your question earlier, will there be resolution? You know, I think that's going to be one of those things that it's either a deathbed confession or you just won't ever know. It's not, no one has cracked that yet because simply no one knows what exactly happened on that morning. But what people does is they bring in all of their expertise, all of their journalists, all of their interviews with people across the board and say, viewer, take a look and you will now understand all of these theories in a very clear, concise way and very compelling, very emotional. But that's one that juries out. Like a lot of these, no one knows what happened.
Also coming up right after the new year on January 2nd, there's an episode subtitled The Darkest of Nights, and it deals with a town in Alaska which had to deal with a very tough crime. And it's one of those crimes where it's sort of the dark secrets of the town show up in the light. Was this an especially tough episode to do?
You know, this is not to give everything away, but you've got a horrible crime and a young girl was accused. And once you get into it, you know, at first you think this could never happen. And then they start, it's sort of the layers of an onion. Start peeling the layers and realizing there's more to this than meets the eye. There's more to the relationship between the victim and the accused. There's more to the family. There's more to other people involved that you never knew at first. And you know, you think small town America, this could never happen. You know, Simon, it's kind of a scary thing because then it does happen. And it happens. It's not just this little town, Craig, Alaska. It happens a fair amount. And then you think, what brought us to this place? Could someone have this much anger and confusion to be accused of such a heinous crime? When, you know, they're out playing volleyball that afternoon at school. Like, you just don't get it. But the big thing in this is that we talk about emotion in our shows. You talk about what makes these shows unique. It's not always the people who were, when I say people who are directly involved, and I mention the family, the lawyers, the detectives, you name it. Sometimes it's actually the people that killed someone or that committed the crime, and we have an exclusive interview with them. And this is one of those where we have an exclusive interview with one of the killers here. And at first you don't know he did it. You can't really figure anything out, but he is talking about everything that led to, we do a good job of keeping that mystery alive until the very end of the show where you put it all together. But it is haunting. It is really genuinely scary and kind of morbidly fascinating at the same time. But you cannot leave your seat. You're just watching. You're glued watching this when it starts to dawn on you that you're listening to firsthand account of something you never thought you'd see. And certainly when you look at the show, you think, how did this happen to this people, you know? So, yeah, it's a disturbing show, but it's one of those that you see more and more frequently. And from a psychological perspective, you want to know why did this happen? And I think we give that answer to a degree in terms of what was going on in these guys' heads. So pretty intense stuff, that one, yeah.
Thomas, before we go, this new series is the latest example of what's been an ongoing idea at ID, which is to partner up with either other television programs or networks or magazines like People, Vanity Fair, you've worked with, 2020, yep. Dateline, et cetera. What's important about these partnerships to make them work? And in the end, why does somebody like People, why does a magazine like Vanity Fair decide, okay, if we're going to do television, your network, ID, is the way to go?
Well, I think that I think there are lots of different answers to that, but I think the main one is if you look at the television landscape right now, it is there's a lot of noise, and there's a lot of noise out there in general. There's so many channels, and how do you figure out what's what? And ID has always been very branded and very niche. We're kind of very specific to true crime and telling these amazing stories. But we don't deviate. We really stick to that, and there's a plan, and it's worked. So I think that what you have is you have strategic partners who are the number ones in their field, whether it's Vanity Fair, whether it's People, whether it's 2020, whether there's some others that we haven't developed right. And they say, wow, we tell these stories. People love them in our magazine or love them on our brand, but how do we make it bigger? How do we use what we have and create more momentum and cut through the noise on their end? Because there are a lot of magazines out there too. So how do you thread that needle and get through the noise there? So then they come to us and really, we want to do something. Obviously, if it's in the crime vein, that's what we do. We don't do something if it's nature programming. We're probably not the ones to do it. But you come to us, and then we can work with them on how do we tell the story that is totally unique to your brand, and then make it a great TV show, a riveting TV show, but then they get the benefit, too, of pushing it on whatever outlet they have and telling their stories. I mean, they're not just pushing the show. People is – this article on Long Island Serial Killer is a fantastic article. One of the journalists over there, Alicia Davis, is top of her field, and she wrote this real deep dive. So you don't just have to watch the show. You should. But you should also read the article. The same thing for Vanity Fair. And they tell – it's not exactly the same. Get a great article in Vanity Fair, learn a ton about it, but you're not going to see an actual interview with one of the people involved, and that's where we come in. And so it works together in that partnership. And we want to do more.
For sure. A lot of noise we made starting tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time with the premiere of People Magazine Investigates. 2-hour premiere tonight. Following episode starting next week at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Investigation Discovery, otherwise known as ID. Check your local listings where ID is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more information about the program, read this week's People magazine, available at newsstands all over the place and online as well. And check out this website, investigationdiscovery.com. It's investigationdiscovery.com. Once again, People Magazine Investigates begins tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 2-hour special opening edition on Investigation Discovery. Thomas Cutler, the executive producer of the program, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with the program tonight, and hopefully a wonderful, very productive long run is in store for your series.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate your time on this. Thanks, Simon.
You got it, Thomas. Oh, anytime. Take care.
You too.
Thomas Cutler joining us live from Silver Spring, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C. More tomorrow will be televised, including our special live interview with Saved by the Bell executive producer Peter Engel, coming up in the next half hour. But first, some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. One of the big movies right now is Tom Cruise playing Jack Reacher again in the sequel to that big hit of a year or two ago. But guess what? Thanks to Audible.com, you can hear Jack Reacher anytime you like, thanks to the brand new release of the newest Jack Reacher novel, and that is Night School. You can check it out as part of a 30-day free trial to Audible.com, an Amazon company. You know, Audible is a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information, inspiration I might add too. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, every category involved, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this on right now at Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook and a 1-month trial of the service. And, of course, because of Amazon's involvement, you know the customer service is going to be top of the universe. So whether you're a Jack Reacher fan or not, check out audible.com and find out why it's a marvelous investment in great audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Once again, for the 30-day trial and that 1 free audiobook, it's audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, our live exclusive interview from Los Angeles with the executive producer of Saved by the Bell and one of the great overseers of teen television on NBC in the 1990s, Peter Engel. And stay tuned, because our classic trivia question of the week is coming up. It's a Saved by the Bell question, and you can win Peter Engel's new book coming out next week if you pay attention. All that coming away after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to www.blogtalkradio.com, the best internet radio in the universe, with over 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Be Simply Radio. Join Suzanne Tarr and her wonderful guest, Be Simply, with Be Simply Radio, every week, various times, right here, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tamabi Televised, this pre-election day edition, live from New York, Simon Applebaum here with you. Happy year long for the ride. If you have a question or comment for our next guest, get on the phone at 646-652-2906. That number's good anyway, or catch us across the country around the globe here on BTR. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 0419, just 1285 already in the room. So either way, phone or chat room, we will hear you. And stay tuned, our classic trivia question is coming up after the interview, and we have a special prize in store, actually two prizes in store this week. What their earlier was to developing great situation comedies in the 1970s and other things beyond, my next guest is just that for the incredible world of teen and family television in the 1990s on Saturday morning. It all started, absolutely, with a program on the Disney Channel. It was called Good Morning, Miss Bliss. It started on the great Disney Channel, and one of the great Disney stars when she was a child, Haley Mills. But then something happened, and it went to NBC under a new name, and became a phenomenon. That program is Saved by the Bell. And before the decade ended, my next guest not only produced that show and a sequel, but a bunch of other shows that made Saturday morning ring for a lot of families and a lot of teenagers. And along the way, he's also done a series called Last Comic Standing, and there's a brand new book out coming out next week called I Was Saved by the Bell. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an interview exclusive, executive producer Peter Engel. Peter, thank you so much for making the time.
My pleasure. It's so good to hear you and be with you.
A lot of people would be very surprised. Absolutely, Peter. It's great to have you aboard. When you look back, are you amazed how much a phenomenon Saved was?
Absolutely. I didn't want to do the show because I had never been interested in doing children's programming. Little did I know that it would become the highlight of my many series in my lifetime, and not only in the United States, but in 85 other countries.
So what made you do it? What made you decide, okay, I'm going to do
this? What happened was I was under contract NBC, and Brandon Tartikoff, the president, said to me, I have an idea to do live programming on Saturday morning. I said, you'd be mean between the Chipmunks and the Smurfs against a rabbit and a raisin? He said, yes. And I said, why don't you find someone else? So I went home that night, and my wife said to me, how was your day? I said, Brandon wants me to do a show for Saturday morning, live action. And she said, well, that's a great idea. What did you tell him? I said, I told him to get someone else. So she said, well, how about our kids? They would love that. I said, you know, I guess you're right. I guess I made a mistake. So I went back the next day, and I said to Brandon, give me 3 weeks, and I'll come up with a show.
Yeah, what was so amazing was that this whole phenomenon almost didn't happen because Disney Channel had this series, which NBC produced. A lot of people don't know that, but NBC produced Good Morning, Miss Bliss. Haley Mills was the star. It was all about the teacher as opposed to students at this school. And, of course, that's where the original cast, Mark Pogosler and so forth, came from. What made NBC say after 13 episodes, okay, might not have worked on the Disney Channel, but it may work on Saturday morning?
What happened was that they saw a promise in Mark Paul Gosselaar, Locke Voorhees, Dustin Diamond, and Mr. Belding, Dennis Haskins. And since I was on the contract to them, they own the show, even though we borrowed Haley Mills from Disney. And they felt if we put the emphasis, obviously the emphasis on Miss Bliss was on Haley as Miss Bliss. But if we did it from point of view of the kids and moved it from Indianapolis, I said, let's go to California. Let's take it to a beach community almost. That was the thinking. And it was, of course, came out to be the right thinking.
How soon after you went into production on the first season on NBC did you know, hey, we've got a cast, they've got chemistry, it's connecting with viewers, especially teenagers, and there's so much we can do with this show. We can maybe use this show to highlight some social issues that, that kids and families are dealing with.
Well, we shot 7 before we ever went on the air. And if you read the first prologue in the book, I had to lie down on Brandon Todikoff's office floor and refused to leave unless he called security, unless he gave me 13 more, because I was afraid we would be on and off the air in 7 weeks, because they would be surrounded by other things. And I my bluff, my only way to go worked. But I knew the first episode that these kids were magic. I had never seen anything like it. Just when they walked into the room all together for the first time, they were magical. They had charisma. They were terrific. First taping, first 7 tapings, no one knew who they were because we weren't on the air. But we used to bus in kids from high schools. And, you know, within 10 minutes of me introducing the cast, the taping was pandemonium. So we didn't know what we had because we didn't know how we would exist. And as I said, our lead-in was chipmunks and our lead-out was Smurfs. And we were against a rabbit and a raisin or a bear. We didn't know if anyone would find us in that universe. But once we hit the air, it became apparent within 4 or 5 weeks that we had hit a totally unserved and unreported audience, 12 to 17, tweens and teens. And in a meeting, like 6 weeks in, someone in the room invented the word tweens.
And at that time, Peter, nobody had seen a program like this before, which actually broke some ground. For example, Mark did The Fourth Wall, where he addresses
right.
the audience, particularly at the beginning of the show. It's a very diverse cast. Mario Lopez, you know, Latino, Lark, African-American. But you're also dealing with issues like drug abuse. Well, one of the characters, for example,
right.
Goes on a cocaine, I believe, a drug binge.
Well, everyone makes fun of Jesse's song, in retrospect, which I wrote, one of the episodes I wrote, although I obviously supervised the writing on all of them. We had written that as though she was taking speed, and the network said, no way, no way on Saturday morning. And so someone in my group said, how about if we do caffeine pills? And the network, they said, okay. But we never changed a word. It was still the exact verbiage and action as if she was on hard drugs. And that I didn't really understand until later on that what impact that particular episode had. It was my daughter's favorite episode. It was a year younger than the cast and worked in the summers as a production assistant. And when I did my college tour in 2006, that was always the number one episode with young female viewers, or even college at that point. And then we did no drinking and driving. And as we got older, remember, they were only 14 when we started. As they got older, we did issues like a drug and oil spill on the campus. But as they got older and the audience got more familiar in the second, well, actually the third and fourth, fifth years, that's when we started to do more issues.
Mm-hmm. How did you get to work in a format like Saturday morning? Because in Saturday morning television, you have to be mindful of the audience. You have to be mindful of, in this case, NBC, what you can and can't do on Saturday morning. We have a show scheduled at 9, 9:30, 10 o'clock. Eastern time. How were you able to strike that balance of doing all sorts of shows, bringing issues in, you know, sort of respecting the audience intelligence, and at the same time, you know, mixing in as much character as you could?
Well, you just said it. We respected our audience. We respected the preteen and teens. We never ever showed them in a life. For instance, someone's had their heart broken, everyone laughs. Yeah, it'll happen to you 40 times in your life. We didn't feel that way. We understood the pain. If the prom queen, Tiffany Amber Thiessen, had a zit on her nose, not in real life, but in the episode, where she used to be the prom queen, that was a disaster to her. That was a life tragedy. And we treated it with respect. In other words, we never wrote down to the audience. We wrote up to them. And we respected them just as we respected the great kids who worked for us. And I think that was the key to the show, was the cast, that they were, except for Screech, who was younger, they were actually playing their own ages. And actually, we had the same problems. You know, we had to run our own school, in addition to the school on the set. And I would have to sit with them certain nights and talk to them for hours about cliques and this one insulted this one. But in the end, they were the best. They were magic. They were professional. And they never, Simon, never, ever, ever missed.
Peter Engel is the executive producer of Saved by the Bell and so many other Saturday morning programs, live action on NBC throughout the 1990s. We're going to get to some of that in a bit. He was also one of the key producers of Last Comic Standing, which has been a summer tradition in recent years on that network. And he has a new book about his television career called I Was Saved by the Bell. And it comes out on November 15th. And later on, you'll have an opportunity with our Clap Tribute Question of the Week to get a copy of that, because that's going to be one of our prizes coming up later in this half hour. Peter joins us live from Los Angeles, Internet Radio exclusive right here on Smart Beat Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment, bring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. Don't forget, this Friday, we have a big two-hour episode for you for Veterans Day. We kick it off with Mike Richards, the executive producer of The Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal on CBS. Price is now its 45th season, the longest-running game show in television history. 10th year with Drew Carey as the host, How Time Flies. Then, from Crackle drama The Art of War, going to the second season next week, the new executive producer and writer, Brendan Kelly. Joe Gangemi is also with us. He's one of the creators and executive producers of the popular Amazon series, also going to season 2 this month, Red Oaks. And finally, we'll have the producer director of a documentary coming to Logo later this month called Hungry, about three chefs, female chefs, who want both equal pay and respect on the job. We have the producer-director of that award winner, Patty Ivers. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, our Veterans Day treat to you right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Peter, what is really amazing about what you did throughout your decade is that you not only had Saved by the Bell, but you were able to run a sequel to it, The New Class, which ran longer than the original. You had The College Years one season in prime time on NBC, and then all these other shows come into play. How did you balance your life and all these shows together as the decade went on?
Well, all of a sudden one led into another, and then we did California Dreams, which was always a stepchild, unfortunately, to Bell. No matter how good it did, it was always in the shadow of Bell, but then it stayed with us after the original Bell went off. Now, we did City Guys, because NBC wanted an urban day Saved by the Bell, something inner city. And that was a heck of a show, and also lasted 5 years. And it had a whole totally different look. Bell was California, and let's go to the beach and sunshine and all that, even though we never showed that till the two movies and the Beach Club episodes, which were a second hour called Adventures. And City Guys, I was very proud of, because one of the things I insisted upon, it had to have an inner city look, both in front of and behind the cameras. And it was very, very diverse in characters and in people who worked on it. And then we did Hang Time, and I believe we did One World, et cetera. But it was a great journey. I mean, I never intended to do teen programming, and everyone said to me, "Were you Zach?" I said, "No, I was never Zach." And I would have loved to have been Zach, but please, I was never, ever Screech.
Looking now at where the careers of the original cast have gone, what do you think of the fact of how they turned out? That Mark Paul turned out to be a terrific actor on shows like NYPD Blue and Franklin Bass, who's in Berkeley's done acting in Woody Allen films, or that Mary Lopez is now the host every night on Extra.
I think they're all terrific. I mean, Elizabeth Berkley was a terrific actress. Tiffany Amber Thiessen went to 90210. Mark Paul was always a great actor. Everyone thought he was Zach, but he wasn't. In life, he was completely opposite of Zach. And that's what no one understood, that a 14-year-old could be such a good actor. Of course, Mario was always a great personality, a great excitement and joy and energy around him. And I always felt that they would always have terrific careers afterwards, and they did, and have, and still do. Mark Paul's playing the old, what do you call it? He's playing the catcher on that new show, Pitch, which is kind of the Kevin Costner role from Bull Durham. And I got to see the first episode yesterday. He's totally terrific actor.
Yeah, and that's one of the season's most acclaimed shows on Fox.
Right, right. And he's really good. He was always good. And he was a joy to work with. They were all a joy. I never had one day. I've had it on other shows, which will remain nameless. But on Bell, I never had a day of any time feeling like, oh, geez, what's going on? They were terrific from day one till we wrapped after the Hawaii movie. I mean, the wedding movie in Las Vegas.
Do you still keep in contact? Do they keep in contact with you?
Once in a while, not recently. Mario, I stay mostly in touch with. And I was a guest at a surprise party a year ago. I was the guest speaker. And that was a treat to see his family and his parents and all his relatives. Because we used to, and his sister, we used to always put, in the summertime, all the siblings of our key cast members in the show as extras if they were off for the summer. So it was Elizabeth's brother and Mario's sister and this one's cousin. It was kind of cool.
Why did you decide that now was the time to write the book? I would say,
well,
could you have done this like 5-10 years ago?
It took me 5 years to write it. And then another 2 or 3 years with my son, who's a literature professor, to rewrite it, to make sure it was just right. I mean, and I think now's a good time because there's such a revival of interest in Saved by the Bell. And in we were selling more T-shirts and knickknacks than we did when we were in our heyday in the 90s. We're selling more T-shirts and hoodies and stuff today. In fact, I'm doing a signing next week, next Tuesday, the day the book comes out, at the NBC store at 30 Rockefeller Center in New York, where I started as a page. And they're selling more Bell memorabilia than we did in our heyday. If anyone wants to that, I'll be signing books.
And I would have a feeling that somewhere, some television station or some multicast network dealing with off-network reruns is running Saved by the Bell. And, in fact, that was another big thing about Saved by the Bell. It was one of the first shows of its kind to be syndicated in early evening television.
Right.
Entertainment, I believe, the former syndicators don't go around, had the kudos to take the show, and they did very well with it. It played like 100 stations all over the country within a year, and it ran several years in that 4 to 8 time period on many stations.
And it's still running. It's still running in many countries in the world. It's still running here. I believe it's on Nick 2 or MTV or both. And in some respects, it's timeless. I can't believe the people I run into who say, you're not. Did you used to be Peter Engel? I go, yeah, I used to be. I'm still am.
What was it like to be an NBC page? I remember growing up, and I once went to NBC when I was in my teens on a tour, and that was like a big deal. to be an NBC page and to be part of, to see the audience for the Tonight Show or see the audience for a game show like Concentration, which at that time NBC was taping game shows, doing game shows live from New York. What was it like to be in that role?
It was unbelievable. I was at NYU, and I was a television major, and I still live, and I'd gone, and I decided I wanted to be an NBC page. I wanted to be in television, and that was not happening quick enough for me. And I heard that it was almost impossible. I didn't want to be an ABC page. I didn't want to be a CBS page. I wanted to be an NBC page, which was the very, you know, very, very highly sought after, and being at 30 Rock. And so I had all kinds of my parents, friends saying, we can get you in, you can get you in, and nothing ever happened. And I was not the big mouth I am now and confident that I am now. And I was about 19, I was at NYU, and one day I just took the subway up to 30 Rock, and I said, I want to be a page. And they said to me, you can't, we only take applications by mail. I said, well, then I'm the first one here, which was so unlike me. Anyway, he sent me up to an office, and the guy said to me, we have 14,000 applications a year, and we take 7, not 6, not 8, not 9, 7. I said, well, then I'm the first one here. And he kept saying, but we don't take them, and I kept insisting. And as it turned out, I read an article a couple of weeks ago, it's harder to get to be an NBC page than to get into Harvard. I didn't know that. I saw that online somewhere, or someone sent it to me. So finally the man, nice man, said, sit down, tell me why you want to be a page, why it's so important. I said, because at film school, 90% of the people want to be in movies and do movies. I want to do television. I fell in love when I was 12 years old with television, and it's the future, it's tomorrow, it's history, and I want to be part of it. And then he looked at me, he said, can you start Monday? We just lost one of our trainees who got sick or is not coming or whatever. And I said, you mean I'm in, I'm really in? And a couple of days later, I got my uniform. It was much different than today. We had wing collars and we had braids, different color braid, and all kinds of polished buttons. NBC page at that time, being at 30 Rock, it's amazing that I'm going back to do a book signing there next week where it all began. And being an NBC page was beyond a dream come true, because we had the run of the building. We could walk into anybody's office. We could walk into any control room, walk on any stage. And it was a fabulous, fabulous experience.
We have a few more minutes with Peter Engel, the executive producer of Saved by the Bell, and so much more on NBC, including Last Comic Standing, which we came back a year or two ago for its latest season. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Lies. And his new book is coming out next week called I Was Saved by the Bell. Stay tuned. You have an opportunity to win it with our Clapper Trivia Question of the Week, which is a Saved by the Bell question. So stick around for that. We had Norma Lear on this program a number of weeks ago. It's one of the great highlights of this program in my life personally to have had him on. 94 years, incredible. He still wants to do television. Are you still looking at doing TV at your age?
I'm not. What I am trying to do is a Broadway musical of Saved by the Bell, in addition to my book, of course. And because I've done 19 series, Simon, and I just, and I never thought I'd get tired of it, because I never did get tired. Loved every minute. But now I have other interests. I have a grandchild. I have the book. And I've just written what we call a book in theater, which would be the script in television, the book for the Broadway musical, and we're now trying to put that together. But with television was the love of my life, and I still love it. I don't have any plans right now to do anything more, but you never know, right? You never know.
Where is the musical at? And have you hired the composer yet for?
Well, I went right to the top, and I was Lin-Manuel Miranda's guest at Hamilton in June, and he is a huge Saved by the Bell fan. In fact, I think he knows more about it than I do, and I wanted him to do it. And so he got wind. He invited me. I saw the show. I went. on the stage afterwards. And oddly enough, you know, so much. I was only in one Bell episode. I was in others of Less Comic. I was always in throwing people off to my not liking. But the network insisted. He walked across the stage, and he, in the voice I did in the episode in Palm Springs, he said, "When I make this putt, you'll owe me $1,000. I said, "Did you rehearse that?" He said, "All day." Well, it turns out that he knows, he's a trivia genius on Bell. And it turns out he can't do it. He's got just so much to do, but he said he would be happy to consult with me from time to time. So we're looking at some other people right now to do the music.
Well, it's a good time. There's a lot of great Broadway composers now, and the musicals are back in vogue, so you got a great choice of people to work with.
Yes, yes. So I hope we get the right mix, and I hope you get to see it. Like, come on your show in person.
I would love to. You've got a date. One more thing before you go,
sure.
Peter. It's interesting that when you started Saved by the Bell, NBC was very big in animation. It's like, your lead in is Alvin the Chipmunks, your lead out is the Smurfs. And now, Saturday morning television on broadcast networks is pretty much all live action. We've covered Lit Entertainment, what they've done. First, they did Weekend Adventure for ABC stations. NBC just came in this year with The More You Know. We had one of the shows, Give,
right,
which is a very interesting show on the air. What do you think about Saturday morning television these days? Which looks like on broadcast, it's live action. There is some scripted live action as part of that. But I'm curious what you think about the medium right now.
Well, as far as the teen television or live action, it's remember, now you have it on Disney Channel, and you have it on Nick, and you have it on the former ABC Family Channel, and you have all kinds, and WB is certainly an outgrowth of what we did on Saturday morning. I think television is serving more people in better ways today than ever before. I'm not sure Saved by the Bell could work today. I'm talking about the purity of it. It's a different time. It's a different place. It's a different age. Social media has exploded. I can only imagine what we used to get 10,000, 12,000 letters a week. I could just imagine if we had the internet with Facebook and email and all that back then. I think the television is doing a good job. I think there's some very interesting shows on. And I'm proud of what we did. And I'm proud that some of the guys who worked for me have gone on to do Miley Cyrus and other Emmy Award-winning children programs. They're very, very. A couple of guys who were with me for years are executive producers of Modern Family. I'm very proud of what we've done and what they've done.
Amazing what one program can do and what it can foster. The book is I Was Saved by the Bell. It comes out next week. Stand by because we're going to tell you how you can get a copy of it. If you want to find out more about Saved by the Bell, book, the TV series, and everything else that came out of it, here's where you can go online, www.iwassavedbythebell.com. That's www.iwassavedbythebell.com. The book will go on sale also online through Amazon.com, which, of course, their Audible division is a sponsor of our show, and BarnesandNoble.com as well. Peter, it has been an honor to have you on this program. Congratulations on everything you accomplished. I wish you the very best with the book and also with the Broadway musical. Hope it comes on soon, and when it does, we would love to have you back. You have a date.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Mine too, and all of our listeners as well. All the great to you, Peter. Take care. Peter Engel, executive producer of Saved by the Bell, joining us live for an interview exclusive from Los Angeles, California. And now it's time for you to put on your Saved by the Bell thinking cap because of our classic trivia question of the week. As we mentioned, you now have an opportunity to win I Was Saved by the Bell by Mr. Engel and Twin Peaks FAQ, the applause book on that classic 1990s ABC mystery series. And as promised, our classic trivia question this week is all about Saved by the Bell. And it's very simple. We mentioned Screech, the classic character played by Dustin Diamond all those years. And here's the question. What was Screech's first name? What was Screech's first name? And we want an exact answer. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and your full mail address. If you are first with the correct answer, you will win I Was Saved by the Bell by our guest just now, Peter Engel. Plus, Twin Peaks FAQ on the classic 1990s ABC Mystery Series that's coming back next year on Showtime. Again, it's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and your full mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer, you win both books. And you can also tweet the answer by using this hashtag, TWBT. That's hashtag TWBT. The Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack. You can learn how at www.hopscotch.com. That's www.hopscotch.com. Remember, you got to be in to win. First correct answer gets it. And if you missed the question just now, no problem. I will post it tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, on my Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag at UVC Simon TWBT. That's a UVC Simon TWBT. We will post the question throughout the week. Remember, you got to be in to win. So all the right bets, make it happen. And let's see if we can get a winner. We haven't had one in, a couple months. Let's see if we can break that spell with the Saved by the Bell trivia question. Again, thank you to Peter for coming aboard. It has been an absolute pleasure to have him on. Remember, we have a two-hour show coming your way on Veterans Day. Our treat to you. We kick it off with the executive producer of The Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal on CBS, Mike Richards. And then Brendan Kelly, the new person executive producing and writing Crackle's The Art of More, which premieres mid-November. Joe Gentile is with us, creator executive producer of Red Oaks on Amazon. And finally, award-winning producer director Patty Ivers, whose latest work is Hungry, which is premiering later this month on Logo. It's all coming up on our special Veterans Day edition, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow We Televise. And next Monday, 9th edition coming your way, kicking it off, Justin Wolf, the executive producer of Mullen, the big hybrid script-unscripted project coming to National Geographic Channel, soon to be called National Geographic, next week. Plus, we'll have people from Window Warriors, the new GSN competition series, and from the new fusion series, The Traffickers, we will have the host and writer, Nalutin Hadaya. That's all next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. If you came in on today's episode late, you want to catch up on what we did this past hour, or catch up on episodes you missed, including that wonderful interview we did with Norman Lear, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televise. And don't forget to check out the podcast. It's always available at iTunes.com. If you have Apple TV, the Apple TV iTunes podcast app. You can find our show and other Blog Talk Radio programs on that wonderful app. iTunes and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. You don't have Apple TV, no problem. Go to an Apple store near you or order it online. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? And what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? We'd love to hear whether you agree or disagree with what Peter had to say just now. So email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to close your name and where you're from. That's how you get involved in our class trivia question of the week. We also want you to get involved in our regular feature show to know. Is there a TV program you like and doesn't get enough attention in your mind? Well, if you let us know, we will highlight that show and you get the credit. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UVC Simon TWBT. That's at UVC Simon TWBT. However, you communicate with us, it's appreciated. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Before we wrap up and say goodbye to you for the day, we want to introduce you to somebody. Her name is Anastasia Belton. For 10 years, she has been one of the key reporters at KUSA-TV, NBC station in Denver. She's won great awards, including regional Emmy, for her work. She came to KUSA in 2006. She also became a naturalized citizen of this country. She came from Russia. And in 2008, she voted in her first presidential election. Earlier this week, she posted a video online to talk about that experience, but more importantly, how important it was and how passionate she is about everybody voting this election day. A friend of mine, Casey Neal, one of my colleagues while I was covering the industry through trade magazines, who is based in Denver, posted on Facebook yesterday. And I would suggest that if you are thinking about not voting, taking a back seat, turning the other cheek about what you can do tomorrow, leaving it to the other person or the next door neighbor, I invite you to see this posting from Ms. Bolton. She's very passionate. and she's very, very, very clear about what the opportunity is to vote tomorrow and what the stakes are and why it's important to vote rather than not vote. You see, coming from Russia, she came from a country that is not democratic, and voting is not a big deal there. Far from it. But what she has to say in that Facebook video, and I hope you get the chance after you hear me to hear her and see her through Facebook, says volumes. There's no question where her passion lies. There's no question where her belief lies. And there's no question for her, voting is a privilege that has to be exercised by each and every one of us. Tomorrow we have that opportunity, no matter where you are in this country, to exercise your privilege, your right to vote. This is the ninth time in our program's run that we've had a pre-election time to share with you that belief. And I want to thank both Anastasia and thank KC for making that appeal. So one more time, I appeal to all of you listening, whether live or on replay, that tomorrow you exercise your opportunity to vote. And if you are thinking about not, please remember this. There are people in this world who are fighting and dying for exactly what we can do. You, I, your friends, your family, and others can do all across this nation tomorrow, and what we can say to the world. They don't have that right. You do. Please exercise it. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday. Have a marvelous election day. Get out and vote. Get your neighbors and friends and family to do so. We'll be back on Friday after your vote counts with a special two-hour edition for Veterans Day, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great out there. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.